Welcome to Dazer Update for August 2nd, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
And I'm Dana Victoria.
And yeah, we've got, let's say, not a big week of news, which is nice for once. So we still have plenty of industry news and whatnot. Yeah, there's some, unfortunately, more layoffs, as well as some EA news on that front. But besides that, we've got some other news that's on a bit of a more positive bent. But I think the thing we really have is more things to talk about, because games have been coming out fast and furious over the last month and are still going to come out for the next couple months here. So so before we get to the news, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I have reviewed Truck Coon is Supporting Me from Another World. This is the newest game from Strange Scaffold, who makes a weirdly huge amount of games that are also a great variety of styles of games. That's which I think is mostly because the team at Strange Scaffold is pretty small and they partner with other developers and whatnot to make new things. And this is their newest one, which I would essentially compare to being like what if you had a Crazy Taxi game, but it wasn't about the taxi. So the story here is that it focuses on a woman named Carissa who's climbing the corporate ladder at her job and has had to sell off her video games and her anime collection for whatever reason to make ends meet until the day she finds out that she is going to be promoted to VP of marketing the following Monday, I guess a week later. And as she is like happy and leaving her job, goes across the street, she immediately gets hit by a truck, killed, and sent to another world, because it's an isekai style story, as you can tell from the very silly title of the game. That's just sent to another world and kind of is still able to talk to the driver that killed her and is kind of mad for a while until she is kind of happily able to figure out what's going on here and work towards a means of getting back to the real world. Which is from, you know, playing the game, sort of driving through this world and completing these objectives that range from various basic ones like drive for X amount of seconds, you know, drive left for X amount of seconds, boost X amount of feet, all that kind of stuff, to things like doing deliveries, since it is a delivery truck that hit her. You can still drive to these specific spots on the map to essentially take a package and it'll point in the direction that you need to go. And, you know, you drive to the another delivery spot to drop it off. No real bonus other than just a thing you can do unless it's an objective that you're given in the top right corner of the screen. So it has achievements for the game that are, I think, one for most of these various things you can do. You know, there's like jumping through billboards, completing deliveries, drifting X amount of meters, and, you know, doing all this different kind of stuff. And the progression here is kind of based on completing those objectives. You get stars out of them, and then you complete milestone objectives that are, you know, more the thing that progresses the story, so that at the start of the next one or the at the end of your current run, you'll get some story between the driver and Carissa about like what their next thing is to do, or, you know, early on it's a lot of just learning the ins and outs of what's going on here as you're kind of working through the tutorial essentially. And yeah, you're doing a lot of that kind of stuff, just doing runs, getting more stars and completing these milestones that unfortunately you don't ever really see until you finish a run. There's like no, there's a a section of the main menu that shows you some of them, but you can't ever, like, look at them to know, like, oh, these are things I should try doing in runs so I can keep progressing this stuff. And so that's the thing, that once you complete all of those objectives, then you kind of get to the end of the game and face the final boss, and good things happen. So I'm not going to really spoil anything about that, but yeah, the entire process of doing all that takes about probably four, I think most people that kind of are enjoying the game would take probably about 3 to 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more if you're just doing a run here and there, not really building up the muscle memory of the world and everything, where everything's at, so that you know, like, oh, I need to bust up hedges. Like, where are those at on the map? If I need to do jumps through billboards, where are those at on the map? If I need to go find, specific things, you know, where you eventually learn where those are on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of helps, because as you're completing those objectives, it extends your time. It starts at like 90 seconds. And if you're getting on a good run, it'll max out at 10 minutes, which in the story sense is because the cops that kind of keep chasing you, there's like a heat meter. At 10 minutes, they send in murder drones. And the driver is very startled by this. And Chris is like, oh yeah, no, that's been a thing for years. But they never get used, so the average person doesn't know they exist. So that's there's a lot of fun, silly stuff. You know, the truck has a like smiling face on the front of it,
because
mm-hmm. that's kind of the vibe they're going for here. And yeah, you kind of get this really fun, kind of crazy taxi style, chaotic world to explore and bust things through, run over people. Because the Isekai part of this is that you're running over people, it sends them to this little screen at the bottom of the screen that is Carissa kind of walking on this like 2D path to fight enemies that are in front of her. And as you max out at 4 enemies,
mm-hmm.
and as you hit every 10 items, you fill up this meter that lets her do a special attack that usually wipes out all the enemies, but sometimes doesn't. And you're kind of just continually doing that while you're driving, and that adds an extra little fun thing that's going on there. And so yeah, that's like the other thing that's going on here. And yeah, like the downsides here is there's some control issues, because you remember Crazy Taxi back in the day, that was a game that had a very specific type of control, where, you know, making turns and some of that, you could kind of get locked into a turn in such a way that kind of be annoying, where it's like the vehicle's fighting against you. And there's some of that here too, but also I think it's just a little buggier in the way that it works. So sometimes it reacts differently than you expect and just kind of ends up being a bit more frustrating. Luckily you have some moves to kind of get the vehicle out of some jams, so that you have like a side swipe left and right that you can use to kind of get out of situations a little more easily, as well as a 180 reverse mode. Mm-hmm. But essentially, if you find yourself like going past something you need to, you can hit triangle or Y, depending on the controller you're using, to essentially do an immediate 180 and start going in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
There's also drift that feels pretty good. But, you know, at a certain point when I'm just supposed to be drifting with the objectives I'm getting, you can kind of just get that going in such a funky way where you're holding a direction that you're not actually drifting in, and then it just kind of goes in a weird direction. It's one of those things where it's like, this is kind of broken, but it's not bad broken. But there were definitely elements of this game that I was not a fan of. There's some big ramps you can find that are almost like a half pipe kind of ramp going up to these higher parts of the map. And every time you would go up one of those and come to land down on the ground, you mostly landed sort of facing down. So your vehicle would always come to a stop for a bit until you hit gas again and kind of get going. When I played this on my Steam Deck, found more graphical bugs where the world in the distance almost kind of disappeared for like half a second. Nothing that like broke the game, but it was definitely like, oh, this may be a little much for the Steam Deck. It also drains the battery faster than almost any game I've seen on the Steam Deck. Almost so much that if I plugged in the Steam Deck, it would almost keep draining battery even while it was recharging. So that's maybe not a great place to play this game on, unfortunately. But yeah, I really like this game. It's just rough around the edges, and it makes sense when it's, you know, a pretty small game made by a small team. They just kind of put their focus on the things that matter most, and they do a good job with this. So I ended up reviewing it with a 4 out of 5. As a very good game, but one that kind of comes with some caveats is your ability to deal with, you know, rough edges to it. But for the most part, that stuff all works out pretty well. So there's that. That's one I recommend. It's on Xbox and PC. $20. Pretty good price. It's also got discounts and all that, so you can check that out. Let's see. What else I've been playing? I've been playing some more Lazy Kickers, kind of just going through and going through a league every session I'm doing, and that's been so pretty fun. My crew is upgraded to having eggs and chickens, which the eggs grow into these ball men that essentially just run into the goal to score themselves and burst into points. That's pretty fun. And now I also have like this like thresher or whatever farm vehicle that's just going around and helping make the plants grow faster, I think. Mm-hmm. Not 100% sure. I'm not paying that much detail to what these things do. I just see if I have enough money for them, buy them, and they make things happen a little faster. And you just kind of keep doing that. So that's been pretty fun to kind of keep working through still. And then the other one I've been playing is Power Simulator 2. So I'm almost done with the Star Wars DLC. I'm on the last job, which is the Millennium Falcon. Essentially, as Lando is getting it cleaned up before he hands it back to Han Solo. So this will be Episode 6. And that's a big vehicle, so I'm been working on the underside of it. And took a break and I'll probably finish that up this week. So that's still been a lot of fun, and I still have the free job that they put out alongside the Star Wars DLC, which I think is a bowling alley, I think is what the other one was. So I'm looking forward to watching that up. So yeah, that's been, the next one after that is a bouncy castle. So that'll be fun. So yeah, that is things I've been playing. So what about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I am still playing Splatoon Raiders. I've got my review for it up on Smashpad for anybody who wants to read. I ended up giving it a 4.75 out of 5. The only reason I docked a quarter point from it was because other than the looter shooter mechanic, it doesn't really innovate anything new for the Splatoon formula. But the thing is, I love the Splatoon formula, so it was just perfect for me. I finished the main campaign, which took me about 15 to 20 hours to finish. Yeah, that last boss fight can definitely be on the difficult side. But the thing is, after you finish, you beat that boss and go through that, you know, that ending sequence, there's like this this whole slew of like post game content that becomes available. Among other things, most of the levels have a new difficulty level that you can go to, where you can get rarer rewards, and the gameplay is even more difficult than it already was. And then after you beat all of those, there is a secret boss at the very end that you have to fight. I am hoping to get to that boss and fight it, because this game is crazy addictive, and I'm loving every bit of it. So, yeah, if you love Splatoon, you absolutely should play this game. And if you're someone who has been wanting to play Splatoon for a while but doesn't really know how to, is like shall we say, intimidated by the fact that a lot of the games are based around the PvP stuff. This is a pretty good jumping on point. But yeah. Other than that, I'm still playing Deltarune during my second run, and I finally beat that secret boss for chapter 3. That was great. That was a multiple weeks long ordeal that I finally managed to overcome. Yeah, so I'm now good. Chapter 4. I'm also like seeing stuff that, I missed the first time around because I'm not doing and because I wasn't like getting all the secret stuff the last time. So, yeah, good stuff. I am, shit's really good. And yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. So, Darren, what about you?
By the time this episode goes out, these embargoes should have been lifted. So first I've been playing Beast of Reincarnation. Again, the review for both these games also should be out by the time these this podcast goes up. But for those of you unfamiliar with Beast of Reincarnation, this is what Game Freak has been working on outside of Nintendo and Pokemon Company's vision, if you will. And basically, like, the game is a third person open world action adventure game, much in line with games like Nier Automata and Stellar Blade. So there is a lot of like platinum stylish hard action DNA here. And like, if you've seen a trailer of the game, like, if you're a huge anime fan, it should definitely beckon some Princess Mononoke vibes, just because like there's a lot of creatures, mythical creatures that like have vines and things growing out of them. The main character also has like a lot of Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind vibes. So yeah, there's a whole lot of Studio Ghibli inspiration in this title. But like the main thing, especially being developed by Game Freak, is that all right, this is not Pokemon, and this is a game with a lot of visual fidelity that we did not know was even popular from or possible from Game Freak, primarily because you have games like, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which when they were first released on the Switch One, they just were not very nice to look at, especially as far as frame rate goes, and Beast of Reincarnation does not have any of those issues. That being said, it's a lot like the other Game Freak games that have come out that are not Pokemon games either. They typically get gameplay right. They typically look good. But in regards to the sum of its parts, it's not quite there. So for the record, I did beat this game. I did enjoy this game, but I just felt like a lot of it was boring. There is a centralized story to it. Basically, you have to like save a nearby village from the Beast of Reincarnation destroying it, and to do that, you have to defeat a whole bunch of other mythical creatures called Nushi, that otherwise like bring power to the Beast of Reincarnation. And yeah, like, while the game is sort of open world, every time you finish a chapter, you're put into a new world. If you want, you can go ahead and backtrack and check out things that were off the beaten path. But doing that opens up different maps, and it doesn't really feel like you're doing much as far as exploration goes, because in addition to your own character, the girl named Emma, you also have a dog or wolf named Ku alongside with you. And whenever Ku senses something in the open world, whether it be things like a treasure chest or things like that, it'll open up, and like there's really no need to do any real exploration because they'll already like point out where on the map you're supposed to go. So you have your points of interest, and you have also the collectibles that you can get. And alongside the collectibles are things like elite enemies and things like that. One thing I want to note is that it's actually really, really hard. Once I got through like a little bit more than halfway, I decided, all right, I'm probably playing this a little bit too slow to get an in-time review. But when I bumped the difficulty down, the matches or the fights weren't exactly easier. You basically just take less damage. So, there were points where I was definitely like still challenged, but it definitely made things more in line with things you had to do. And while this game isn't necessarily a Soulsborne, Souls-like kind of game, there definitely are some aspects of it, especially things like, all right, if you die, During phase three of a boss, you have to start from phase one again, and things like that. Luckily, it's forgiving to a point where usually you have a save point right before a boss, so you can go ahead and take advantage of all the mistakes you made before. But as far as things like, collecting your soul or whatever it may be, like that's not a thing in this game. It's really all about just standing, boss movements, and things like that. And the combat is really, really fun. It's very counter. So you have to make sure that you're parrying at the right time, getting your hits in at the right time. And the thing that gives it a little extra wrinkle is your dog companion, or the wolf named Ku, can use their own attacks. And from there, it kind of feels like a turn-based kind of thing because their actions are pretty much built on a gauge based on your own success in the fight. And yeah, like you'll receive like some perks when you dodge at the right time, when you parry and whatever it may be, because you'll be opening your opponent up to more of an attack. So yeah, the game as a whole takes around like 20 to 30 hours to complete or roll credits on, just based on your ability to get through these bosses. And yeah, I had a good time. Would I recommend this for $60, $70? Probably not. I'd probably like recommend people wait till it drops in price. Again, if I have to compare this to anything else, it would probably be like a sort of Stellar Blade without the fan service, which is a good thing, as well as a little bit of Nier Automata, but it doesn't have nearly the depth that Nier Automata had. And Automata is also definitely more of a RPG than this game was. But yeah, it's a solid attempt. I just wouldn't recommend this on day one, nor would I recommend it for full price. The next game I've been playing is Big Walk. As of right now, I have not beaten this game yet. If you've not heard about this one, this is a multiplayer game released by House House, the company that behind Untitled Goose Game. So you can tell there's going to be a whole lot of hijinks here. The game is sort of House House's take on Friend Slop, if you will. Basically, the game is designed for 2 to 8 players, and basically you're on a big walk. There is an end to this game. There is like something that you have to do. But at the end of the day, the game relies on your ability to communicate with proximity chat or with the tools given to you. When you start the game, like they do their best to tell you, oh, like make sure you're not playing with somebody in the same room as you or things like that, because they really want you to use all the tools and other things necessary to really get by that, difficulty of communication. But at the same time, while I understand that that's like the whole basis of it, like if you only care about beating the game, like you might as well just go ahead and quote unquote cheat. And even though my brother and I are doing that, he's the one I'm playing with, by the way, we still like haven't gotten to the end, just because, like, in my opinion, the puzzles are a little obtuse. A lot of them require, I would say, more effort than what's really necessary. Like, for example, one of them is you want to make sure that you have the right pictures on the screen. And the only way to actually know what picture belongs on your screen is to use a telescope. Make sure your partner is in the area that your telescope is pointing at, which is many, many kilometers away from you. And then, they'll go ahead and communicate which picture needs to be posted on there. There's also a very similar puzzle to that, where instead of the pictures, they're really just like random squiggles on a panel. And I'm like, all right, how are you exactly supposed to like explain how this works? And the puzzles get more and more difficult. Like, for example, you have to look at the right combination of lights, and those are even hard to explain. So, especially if you're trying to play with somebody who doesn't even speak the same language as you, I would really find this to be troubling in that regard. That being said, like when you have more than two people, the whole idea is for the game to be super chaotic and fun in that regard. And while that could be fun, especially if you enjoy the peaks of the world, at the end of the day, if you want to, play this game to beat it, and you're playing like that, it'll take you way more, way longer than it should. It's been suggested that this game should take around 12 to 15 hours to beat. We've probably played for around 8, just because it's been hard to match up our availability. And then when we do play, we just get frustrated with what's happening. So this has been kind of a hard game to really give a score to, because it's really going to depend on who you are. But for my own tastes, it would probably be at a 3 or below. And that'll depend, like if we actually decide to actually go through the whole thing and beat it. But yeah, that's about it with that one. And then the last main game that I've been playing is Rhythm Heaven Groove. We had our review go up earlier this week on Smashpad. And yeah, if this is the Switch's swan song, they're definitely going out with a high note. If you've never played a Rhythm Heaven game before, The main thing that I can really compare it to is WarioWare, except that it's completely based on like, your rhythm. All of the mini games are really, really simple timing based games that just depend on your ability to find that rhythm and find that beat. And they're really, really short. And the best thing about it is that you're kind of forced to go through a very short but detailed tutorial so that you know how to play. And like, this is one game that I can definitely recommend trying to demo out for. And if you really like the demo, you'll definitely really like this game. And there's a whole lot of value to it. Every stage in the game has three worlds and a remix to play through. So there's about six stages in the game, three worlds each. So that's like, 18 different levels. And then basically, in order to unlock the next level, you have to complete it at a satisfactory rate, which means that, all right, the game does a good job of making sure that you at least know how to play it before having you move on. And then all of a sudden, when you play the remix, you're playing a remix of those three games based on a different song. And the music in this game is fantastic, and it's really just fun trying to remember everything that you learned during that play session and applying it to what you're doing then. And yeah, like after you beat the first six stages, you roll credits, but you find out there are two more. So that, adds even more content to the game. And yeah, there's a whole lot more, even if you beat like the eighth stage. And I'm not going to talk too much about that. But also, there are multiplayer games that you can play as well. And the structure is the same. You have to play a game good enough to unlock the next one. And at the same time, you can be unlocking more and more as you go. So this game, I believe, is $40, and there's just a whole lot of value to it. I've played this game for over 10 hours, and like I want this game to be one of my like main games on the plane when I'm bored or things like that, because you can definitely enjoy it in short spurts, or you can definitely enjoy it for a long period of time. If you're not a rhythm game if you're not a rhythm gamer, this probably isn't going to change your mind, but I would still recommend trying to demo to see if it's your cup of tea. But yeah, that's about it for me.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And this first one is an interesting thing that was put up on itch.io. There are bundles there that happen every so often to raise funds for various things. And this one is for the Game Industry Hardship Fund that is distributed by the United Video Game Workers, CWA Local 9433. To, help developers and, people that are laid off in the industry, to help make ends meet for a bit, whatever their needs are. And yeah, this is a way that you can help with that while still getting some stuff out of it. Because yeah, this has 127 items in it, mostly games that you can play. Some really good ones like Arranger, a role puzzling adventure, Future Grind, a short hike, Hold Down, Skatebird, and a bunch of other games here that are worth checking out. I believe it's at least $10 that you can pay here. You can throw in more if you want. And yeah, they're almost about to hit their $100,000 goal. They're at 89,000 right now, so should hopefully hit that pretty soon. And yeah, there's still another 11 days for this, so you got some time for that. So yeah, I wanted to bring some awareness to that for people that want to help out those in the industry that are suffering right now. And this is one way you can do that. So there you go.
All right, sounds good myself.
Yeah. So there you go. For other things going on, we got subscription news for PlayStation Plus Essential. Their monthly trio is going to be available here on Tuesday, August 4th. And we got some interesting games here. For the first one, for the PS5 and PS4, Dying Light 2 Stay Human Reloaded Edition. So this is, yeah, a game that you can play solo, but also can play with up to three other people in that. So make choices as a group, I guess, for that. So that's one you can check out. Also available on there is for the PS5 is Big Walk. As Danner talked about. So this is the cooperative sort of multiplayer adventure game of sorts where you can hang out with buddies in this sort of fairly large environments and solve puzzles, hang out, or just grief each other if you want. So that's one you can check out. It's only available for this month for, you know, through PlayStation Plus.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an extra title or anything that's will be available longer. So if you want that, you should check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the PS4, Signalis as one of the more recent sort of highly acclaimed indie horror games that takes inspiration visually from classic like PS1 horror games.
Yeah.
Although I would say it also has a bit of a crossover with like Oni on the PS2 in terms of having an anime style to it.
Yep.
With all the like flat shading to especially your character's look.
Mm-hmm.
That looks really nice versus it being, you know, sort of like a very detailed model that, you know, gets shrunk down in polys and all that. And yeah, I've not played a ton of this when I was on Game Pass, but I did play for a bit and thought it was an interesting game. I don't know how much longer I would have played it because I'm not a big fan of horror games, but it's got really interesting stuff going on there. So I just want to check out. And I know they've added updates after launch to increase the accessibility options for the game.
Yeah.
So there are more ways to get into it without necessarily having to deal with the limitations that they had in there at launch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one you can check out.
Mm-hmm.
And they also mentioned that there is going to be a PlayStation Plus pack for Marvel Tokon Fighting Souls for launch. So yeah, as of August 6th, when that game launches, there will be an extra PS Plus pack you can get for free if you have PS Plus. That will get you, let's see, 5 avatars featuring different characters from the game instead of in-game results screen character poses featuring 20 characters. I'm not sure. I think that's it for this pack. So an extra little bonus for playing it on PS5. So there you go. That's your offerings for this month. So Brandon, anything here you're looking forward to?
Well, I mean, other than Big Walk, I've already played all of this. Especially Signalis in particular, I can highly recommend. That game is amazing and exceedingly creepy, and it also has a bunch of layers to it that you don't really understand until you get sort of midway through it. And there's shit in it that is just plain eerie. It's got some pretty amazing world building too. That's kind of like recursive, and it kind of like folds in on itself. It's kind of hard to explain. It's something you have to experience yourself. But damn, is it good?
How about you, Danra?
Yeah, I mean, like the main thing for me is Big Walk, just because, you know, I do want to see more people play it. Obviously, right now with me playing it right now and like having not beaten it, and I don't know if I'll beat it by the time the reviews are all up. I definitely need a guide because my brother is pretty stumped too. So yeah, looking forward to people jumping on it too so I can actually get some help.
That seems like thematically correct to me because Big Walk is kind of a collaborative experience.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, as I stated, it's like when not everybody has like the same goals, it's just tough to like, you know, actually finish it. And you know, sometimes you don't want to finish a game, you just want to be able to vibe, and Big Walk is definitely going to do that. So I look forward to seeing like House hopefully get their deserved success there, because I do like Untitled Goose Game and there are aspects of this game that I do enjoy as well. And then secondly, I have never played Signalis. I did download that game when it was on Xbox Game Pass. I logged into my Xbox the other day and saw that it was gone, so yeah, I never got a chance to try it out, so maybe I can find time to try that one out.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then the other subscription news involves Nintendo Switch Online. So they're doing two different things here. So the one, it was weird when they announced this, because they announced the big thing and then the other one just kind of got quietly, you know, posted somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the first one that's coming out is on, I think this is regular Nintendo Switch Online, but I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which one the Virtual Boy is on. But they're adding the last two games for mm-hmm. that are both, I believe, unreleased games.
Yeah.
D-Hopper and Zero Racers.
If I'm remembering correctly, there was only like 10 or 15 titles that were ever actually developed for the Virtual Boy. If that, it could be even less. Because it was such a massive failure that it just kind of fell off like almost immediately after it debuted.
Yeah. And so these are the last two that will be added there.
Mm-hmm.
For that, okay, I think it is expansion pack. So the other thing they're gatekeeping with this is that you need a physical holder for the Switch 2, or the Switch or the Switch 2, to use the Virtual Boy app properly. If you're in handheld mode, you can also just play them on there, but it'll be like you're playing, you know, the two lenses on the screen with whatever, you know, visual alterations that comes with that when there's no holder to translate that for your eyes properly. So you can play some games that way. It just won't be the ideal way. Which is disappointing because there are some good games there and interesting games that would be fun to play, and other emulators have figured out the problem of displaying those games properly on a 2D screen just fine. So that should be a thing that happens, but the one platform on Nintendo Switch Online plus expansion pack that requires additional hardware to play properly. But the other game that is coming out on August 13th is the bigger one of the bunch here, and that is Super Mario Sunshine is finally hitting near the end of the summer.
Yep.
Well after the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what their plan is here for that, but you can play the 3D Mario game that made people question what's good about 3D Mario games.
Oh, yeah. Or their sanity, for that matter.
Yeah, because it was clearly a game that they kind of got out, put out before it was really ready.
Yeah, it was definitely rushed a little. And especially when it comes to the physics, because that game has the wonkiest physics you will ever find in a Mario game.
Yeah, they have one of the special levels is like a pachinko board kind of thing.
It's not, it's literally a pachinko machine, basically.
Yeah, but you have almost no control over what's happening there.
Much like an actual pachinko game.
Yeah, but the way that you can still have the flood on that and be like, I can move a little bit, but not enough to really affect anything.
Yeah.
And they just end up having to constantly do it over and over again until you get the lucky run.
Yeah. And when we say lucky run, we really mean lucky run, because you can literally, like, do everything right and, like, find yourself able to pilot, like, right to the center to where the shine is, and the physics can still find a way to screw you over.
Yeah. You just get funneled out of a thing that just shoots you to your death.
Yep. And, of course, there's the others that famously give people nightmares. People talk a lot about the floodless sort of special challenge levels, the ones where it's like a bunch of stuff hanging over nothingness and there's like the a cappella Mario theme in the background. I personally did not find those particularly difficult back when I first played it. I will tell you which one I did find difficult, though, and it's still one of those things that still haunts me in my dreams, and that was the Sandbird level. Do you remember the Sandbird level? Because I certainly do.
Yeah. That's the one that's almost like a Super Mario 64 kind of stage, but you just have this big bird.
That's made out of sand.
Was that one the one where we were forced to use the fast jet ski thing?
No, that was the one where you had to, like, it was the one where it's like a giant bird that's made out of like sand cubes that's like,
yeah, and if you stood in the sand it would go down, but for some reason I'm remembering a jet ski.
There is like jet ski related levels, yeah. But the one thing I remember about the Sandbird level is the fact that about midway through it, the Sandbird decides that it's gonna do a barrel roll.
I remember that, definitely.
Oh yeah. And it's like right after you go you cross the cloud that usually has like the one up mushroom on it it's like yeah in fact that's exactly what it is. It's right after you find the cloud that's got the giant mushroom on that's got the one up mushroom on it. It decides, hey, I'm gonna go and we're gonna go ahead and do a little barrel roll here. And I gotta tell you, that is probably the single, but even worse than like the pachinko board level, that is almost damn near impossible. Simply because of the way how wonky the physics are, the sort of like because you're technically like going up in the air, there's like this weird like gravitational pull that's like pulling you down at the same time, and it's just it's you just have to luck out in order to manage to do it.
Yeah, I feel like there's also the roller coaster stages.
The roller coaster stage wasn't at was it the roller coaster stage was kind of hard until you kind of figured out how it how like th there are mechanics to it that make it not as difficult as it originally seems, but the game doesn't tell you that. You basically have to figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
And oh yeah, and of course that frickin' the giant Bowser robot is annoying in and of itself. Yeah. Also, I don't know. Does anybody remember like the giant like ghost manta ray thing that was like a? It was basically like a shadow, and it was like spreading this like electric gr goop onto the beach, and then like once you actually got it, it would like scatter like crows into like a bunch of little tiny manta rays, and it was on a timer, so you had to like get rid of all of them before the timer was up.
Yeah, that was one of the initial levels from the hotel level,
Yep.
and yeah, the big manta ray came, and once you squirt at it, it'll, like you said, it'll just separate into more and more and more. And the thing is, those things were both fast and hard to find, and
Yeah.
yeah, if you ran out of time in the level, you died too.
Yeah.
yeah.
And that's on top of the fact that, again, that goop that they put out is electric.
Electric. So the damage to you is even more. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a goop, so it's hard to get out of as well. God, why
Yeah.
did we ever like that game?
I again like you talked about it a little bit, but like when this game first came out, like it was probably the most divisive game as far as reviews went at the time. Like it either got tens or it got sixes.
Yeah. And I say that saying it's still one of my favorite Mario games
Yeah,
because
there
it's.
isn't a bad 3D Mario. I mean, I'm gonna go ahead and say it. This is the worst one, but it was still a good game. Don't get me wrong there. And like, it was also one of those games that encouraged you to be creative. Like, the game never taught you how to do the spin jump where you can squirt and jump and spin at the same time. Like, that was actually one of the key things you wanted to do in that mentor level you were talking about. And there was also another move that you could do on the tight ropes with Flood so that you could swing higher and farther. And it was really hard to do, but if you knew how to do it was good for speedrunning, tell you that.
Yeah, that's a game I got when I got it used when I got my GameCube and did not get far in it because I just did not enjoy it all that much. Yeah, it would not have been until Galaxy that I really enjoyed the their next like 3D Mario game after 64, which I liked a lot, but also that was a weird thing where I really liked the visual style of Yoshi's Island, and it's like this game looks like shit compared to Yoshi's Island. Even for all it was doing, that was cool. It just kind of had a bland look to it in comparison.
I think part of that, initially, especially when you first start the game, was that it was just straight up dark. And the reason why it was dark was because ink was covering everything, including like where the camera was in the sun. And then once you start to unlock more levels, more of Isle Delfino start to get light up, and that's where you really appreciate the vibrance and the graphics. So that darkness didn't help it at all.
Yeah, there's that intro that is probably the most fever dream thing I've seen
Oh
we'd seen
yeah.
in a Mario game in a long time, because when they bring in real world things into Mario games, that's when it kind of gets fucked up. Like, you know, New Donk City is really fucked up, but it's them getting accused of, you know, stealing all the shines in this, Delfino Island here, and going through that weird court scene where Peach is like trying to act like his lawyer to object, and he just says, "Overruled. And you're going to get sentenced to community service. You got to clean everything up." They should have just left it. Like, fuck you, flying away.
Like, bitch, I'm flying with the Queen of the Mushroom, with the Princess of the Mushroom Kingdom. The hell do I have to listen to you for?
Yeah, you get to deal with this dumb, goopy Mario clone that's running around doing shit. So, yeah. So there you go. This is also the first time you saw Mario in a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Until you would see him shirtless in Super Mario Odyssey.
For some reason. But
that created its own issues of, like, where's his nipples? So he's not a human? I was like, yeah, if you look at New Donk City, like, yeah. He definitely doesn't look like the other humans.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's enough of that. But we'll get to some other stuff coming out in the near future, especially this game that's been pretty interesting to look at when I've seen new information on it, which is Mexican Ninja. That is coming out August 20th. This is like a 2.5D beat-em-up roguelike kind of game where the whole thing is you're going through the streets of Nuevo Tokyo. What they call a fever dream collision of Mexican grit and Japanese cyberpunk, ruled by the corrupt Narcuzas. And it's like, all right, that's dumb enough I can understand what's going on here. We're just like, what if we took these two gangs that are specific to these countries and merge them together in this weird fusion? And that seems like what they're going for here, and it looks pretty neat. So that's one you can check out. It's going to be on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. So yeah, there you go. There's a demo on Steam, so you can check that out ahead of time. Let's see, coming out on August 25th is Blood Dungeon. This is the new game from Messhoff, who has made a bunch of games like Nidhogg and a bunch of other stuff. And this is their new one that's kind of combining 2D platformers with Vampire Survivors to it, and it's a very ridiculous crossover kind of thing here of these two genres you would never expect to be pushed together, and it kind of works out pretty well. So yeah, this is going to be out on PS5, Xbox, Switch, and Switch 2, and PC on August 25th, so that's when you can keep an eye on for that, so that looks neat. And then on October 21st, Stupid Never Dies is coming out. This is the game that I always, in my mind, refer to it as the Machine Gun Kelly game. Because we had one of the trailers at one of the Keeley shows was basically a music video of sorts, and it was that level of pop punk music, and that's just cemented as like, okay, they made like a Machine Gun Kelly song, and that's not complimentary. But yeah, that's out this fall in October 21st, and yeah, for PS5 and PC, and it looks like it could be pretty interesting. Sega seems to be co-publishing it, which is interesting. They're going to be helping at least with physical releases and helping it release in the rest of the world. So yeah, that looks like an interesting game. So there you go.
Awesome.
And yeah, so that's the games I got here. Anything you're interested in, Brandon?
Not particularly right now. I'm gonna need to see a little more.
Anything for you, Dan Rib?
It looks solid. It's nothing that really like tips my skirt up or anything, but they all look cool. So,
yeah. We got one more positive news before we get to the rest of this stuff here. I don't know if it's that positive. Croc 2 Kingdom of the Gabos is getting remastered. So the first game did well enough that they are doing the second game. And yeah, that's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. No date yet. So I'm guessing probably next year for that. And yeah, we'll see if that ends up doing well. But yeah, that's just, I don't know. That first one seems all right. I haven't checked it out, but yeah. But yeah, I don't know if these are going to do that well enough to maybe justify an actual game, an original game from them, but who knows. We'll see. But that's something you can look forward to. Let's start to get to the industry news here. First up, Jeff Punk, makers of Stellar Blade Blood Rain, I believe is the next game.
Yep.
They are promoting it with this music video that is full of generative AI.
Yep.
So even the people that were still interested in this game, despite the look of the main character being that of like a very young teenage girl, are also getting pissed off by this.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, it just does not look good. And yeah, it's an unfortunate thing to see, but seems to further cement sort of who these guys are. And yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like the first game was good enough you could build on that in some good ways, and they said, nah, we're going to go into the creepy ways.
Yep.
And also invest in Gen AI.
Yeah.
And these are the people that have Shinji Mikami's new studio. So that's
great. It's always a real bummer, you know. Obviously, like, I'm not like from that exact territory, but you know, as somebody that's Filipino American and gets a lot of trending stuff from things that are back home, like the unfortunate truth is Asia has embraced and loves AI. So. It's unfortunate, and it is what it is, unfortunately. It doesn't mean we have to live with it, though. Like, you know, you can definitely still have your thoughts on it, but, like, as far as, like, changing a company like this one's mind, don't see that actually happening, especially since Stellar Blade, or at least the original, like, pandered to a lot of unsavory fans' demands, so it's tough to say what'll happen next.
Yeah. I guess it was a good time for Sony to pull out of this game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe they're publishing this one. I believe Shipped Up is doing all of it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, good luck with that. So yeah, there you go for your Gen AI news of the week. Next up, we got some layoffs. Double Fine has announced that they are laying off 23 staff members after being able to go independent from Xbox. And yeah, not a huge surprise because of their circumstances, they're a studio that, you know, cannot really make the big enough games to justify having a bunch of people there, especially when their office is in San Francisco. Very expensive place to keep people employed and all that. I believe they're still in the same office they've been for a long time. Every video I've seen still seems to feature at least that office that Tim is in a lot from the videos and their documentary stuff. So I don't believe they really tried to move out of the city or anything. But yeah, this is always kind of what Xbox was setting them up for, so that these numbers wouldn't be added to their 3,200 people they're laying off over the course of the next year, so that they look like the good guys and Xbox looks like the bad guys. Or Double Fine looks like the bad guys for laying these people off. So yeah, there you go on that one. Then we have this one here. Lightspeed LA has announced they are laying off 80 people.
Mm-hmm.
This is the studio that was working on Last Sentinel. This was shown at one of the Keeley shows like maybe 3 years ago or so, that just has not had any further sort of major trailers put out since then.
Mm-hmm.
I think because they've had a bunch of development issues. I think people were suggesting that they were trying to make some sort of GTA style game that didn't go well for that, and kind of had to cut back and rework what they were working on, and still seem to be far enough away from release that they are laying off a bunch of people and sort of rethinking what they're doing here, unfortunately. So this is one of the few studios that Tencent is continuing to own in the US and supporting, so that's at least the bright side of this. They seem to believe in whatever weird game they were trying to make here, that they want to kind of get its completion. But what state that's going to be, like what kind of game that's going to be, still seems fluid enough right now. So I hope they do get to finish the game. But Tencent has not been one to wait too long. Especially, you can tell from their name, they're in Los Angeles, not exactly a cheap city to employ people in. So I don't know, we'll see where that one goes. But more rough times for studios there. It's also the studio where Capcom veteran Hideaki Itsuno joined, so...
Yep. Ooh, yeah. And honestly, you know, we've been saying, and I've been saying for a while now, that the industry is in a state of contraction right now, and it's not going to stop for a while. We're essentially seeing, like, the old sort of AAA industry that sort of came to a head like 15, 20 years ago. Basically, the bottom has finally fallen out, and now everybody has to suffer for it.
Yeah, at least unless you're a EA CEO Andrew Wilson.
Oh yeah, he gets to get a golden, you know, the worst he gets is like a gold-plated parachute.
Yeah, and right now, after laying off a number of Battlefield 6 developers earlier this year, after the launch of the game that, as they say, hit all of the milestones for a high-quality launch. He said it achieved meeting all milestones for a high-quality launch of Battlefield 6 with positive critical reviews, stable services and gameplay, with interim milestones related to future launches being met. I assume that means, like, update launches. And as a result of that and the sort of success of EA in getting acquired by the vast majority being a Saudi public investment fund company, Andrew Wilson's getting a pay raise from $30 million to $38
million.
Mm-hmm. A nice little bump of $8 million for the good work. And, yeah, that's just not... a great thing to see for what he's put the team that supposedly had the best-selling game of 2025 in the U.S. Laid off a bunch of people at DICE, Criterion, Ripple Effect, and Motive Studios. Despite them meeting all their milestones and selling really well. So yeah, that's great. For as much as EA's had trouble over the years, he's still continue to be at the helm for going on at least 10 years now at this point, despite looking like the bad guy in that second Mirror's Edge movie or game. Which I don't know if that's a sign of what people, at least at DICE, thought of him, but yeah, maybe he'll go away when the Saudis take over. Who knows. But yeah, we'll follow it up with the other bit of EA news, which is that their acquisition by the Saudis and the two other small groups involved in that is expected to close by August 4th after the U.S. has given their final approvals.
Yeah.
So yeah, on Tuesday, you likely expect an announcement for that or sometime this week that... that will go through, and everything that you buy from EA from further on is supporting essentially the Saudis.
Yeah.
Much like SNK, though. Went through different means for all that. SNK was cheap to acquire by just buying almost all their stock. This cost $55 billion is going to put the onus on EA to work off a bunch of that debt. That'll be where the fun part of EA's continued existence is going to be. So, yeah. There you go.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, this was all stuff that was an expected outcome. Yes, I do have some skin on this, but at the end of the day, it's like, we don't know what's going to be in their lineup aside from what's coming in sports. And as we know, Saudi Arabia has most of their investments in esports. That's part of their deal with SNK. That's why they own Evo. So yeah, like, we can only assume that a lot of bad will come, but at the same time, it's like, we don't actually know what's in the pipeline. We don't know who is going to be laid off or if there even will be any, because they've already done a lot of that. They've probably done like some of the most of it. So yeah, at the end of the day, like, I have a lot of friends at EA who are, they just don't know what to expect. So if they don't know what to expect, why should we? So it's hard to say.
Yeah. So yeah, that's going to do it for the show this week. Not really a ton going on right now, but August at least has some games of note to check out. I'm going to look over our list here. Yeah, Beast of Reincarnation and Big Walker both Tuesday.
Yep.
Along with Kinseed. We got Akatori on the 5th, Echo Breaker, Marvel Tokon, Fighting Souls, and Restory on the 6th. So a decent amount of stuff there. Mm-hmm. Covering a variety of types of games, so look forward to seeing how that stuff turns out. So, yeah. That's going to be your games of the week. So, yeah, thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about, as well as some new games and such. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting week ahead, as we expect the EA news to be probably the dominant thing when that happens. So, there you go on that front. But yeah, if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check out and select strangers who are annoyed at developers, especially ones that have good enough art teams and such, making things out of Gen AI when they really don't need to.
Yeah.
I was literally watching an old Star Trek original series show that is literally about them putting AI into the Enterprise. And surprise, surprise, it takes over the ship and tries to keep anybody from taking back over again and kills a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything I heard them talk about was like, seems exactly like what's happening in Gen AI.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes poorly too, so, yeah. People were thinking about that kind of stuff even 60 years ago. So, there you go. Yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.